And welcome to Blue Jay Banner here on the Blue Jay Banner podcast channel on YouTube. Thanks for joining us. Our first show, believe it or not, for 2023. Because of games and other things, we haven't had a regular Monday show yet. Tim Krueger, along with Ross Ferrarini. How you doing, Ross?
Good. All good. Excited to talk to Flan, then excited to watch the penultimate college football game.
Oh, I like it. Well, of general local interest, wow. Congratulations, yep. Jackrabbits.
I thought you were talking about Max Duggan from Council Bluffs, but yeah, well, Jackrabbits.
Absolutely. Yeah, we talked a lot about him last time, but South Dakota State just pounded North Dakota State.
A ton of Jackrabbits on my flight last night.
Really?
Yes, tons.
Where did you fly to St. Louis? Oh, so they must have flown up to St. Louis and then over. Okay.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. So big congratulations to South Dakota State winning the national title. So what is that? 9 out of 10 years North Dakota State's been in the final, though. I think they've won 8 of them.
Something else.
But that's no loss their defensive coordinator Northwestern today, though. So, well, welcome. If you haven't been a regular viewer of Blue Jay Banner, welcome aboard. Obviously, it's a show about Creighton athletics. Thanks for finding us. Make sure you hit the subscribe button and the like button to spread the word about Blue Jay Banner. And also, if you haven't already done so, make sure you put it on your calendars to also check out our postgame show called Instant Reaction. Wednesday night, we'll be on right after the game, right about 8:05, as soon as the Jays and Musketeers get done, for a post-game show. Interactive, you can shoot us an email, and you can do that even for this show, bjbinstantreaction@gmail.com. Shoot us an email, and we'll get you on the show. Setting up the show tonight, head basketball coach at Creighton University, the women's team, Jim Flannery, joins us. It's been a while since we talked to Flan. Big national TV game yesterday. They're just racking up national TV games, which is kind of cool. We'll talk to Flan about that game, a blowout over Marquette, and what's ahead for the Jays moving forward. And then later on, Adam Baum of Cincinnati Inquirer, the beat writer for Xavier, will join us. Adam's been a freaking guest on Blue Jay Banner throughout the years, and we'll have him on kind of break down what's going on with the Musketeers and how impressed I've been with Sean Miller and how impressed I've been with Zach Fremantle. Ross, you've swung me over.
They're awful good, Dave. We've got all four teams on the men's side that are in the top 25 right now where I've been very impressed with.
Yeah. But we'll get to more of that talk later. And but first up, we're going to talk some women's basketball here with the head basketball coach at Creighton University. The one, the only, Mr. Jim Flannery.
Hey, how are we doing?
Hello, coach.
What's going on?
I think this is your first visit to us on the podcast. So this is awesome. I know.
Gosh, I'm excited.
We get to see your wonderful face and, you know.
Right?
You get to see Ross's and, you know, it's great. It's great. How you doing, Coach?
I'm good. Hey, Ross, I saw the West Side Warriors play the other night.
The women or the men's?
The boys. I saw them play. I saw them beat the heck out of Millard North.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Yeah. They got it. They're
way
doing
better
nice
than
things.
When you were playing.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. They're it kind of seems like on the men's side right now, almost everybody's playing for second with Bellevue West. But
yeah, they knows? Seem like they're about 12 to 20 points better than the next best team, doesn't it seem?
Yeah.
Like? Yeah. Well, playing a heck of a game to have on national TV yesterday.
That was a big step up from our performance on Wednesday.
Yeah. Hey, I want to go back to that a second. Can I go back to that first before we get to the positive? So there was a little bit of hubbub on social media about the crowd. How much did that, do you think, affected your team that there wasn't a lot of energy in the building?
I think it plays some factor. I mean, you'd like to think that your players are you only get to play about 32 games a year. So it's, you know, you, you don't want to use that as an excuse, but yeah, our crowd wasn't great. And I just felt, you know, I never felt good about it based on, I didn't feel like we were quite ready. And even, you know, and that's part of, that's certainly on me too, but you know, Providence isn't a name opponent. I mean, they're not, we've kind of had our way with them. And so we weren't, but we also made 16 threes and lost in our home building. That's hard to do. So I think it had, you know, it wasn't our shooting. It wasn't our offense. It was guard them. So, yeah.
But you flipped it around yesterday.
We did.
A great start, shot 56% the first quarter. That was a great way to come out right out of the gate, wasn't it?
Yeah. It was really, really good. I felt like we were, you know, we showed them just enough. I would say we got into them just enough after Providence. I felt like they were reflective and kind of just had a different resolve and a different mindset. And so, yeah. And to get off to that kind of a start, I mean, I think was key, because Marquette is, they're offensively challenged, but they're just a gritty, hard, you know, they play hard. They're physical, they rebound. And, you know, so a lead against them is, you know, a little more comfortable because they can struggle to score it.
Land, you guys had a heck of a stretch there right around Christmas with Arkansas, Stanford, and UConn back-to-back-to-back games. I guess, you know, as a coach, and you've been doing this a long time, so you know the ropes there, but can you chat a little bit about, I guess, kind of the fine line between how fragile that can be on a team psyche, but also how beneficial that can be for a team to play three games like that, a tough stretch like that, kind of, you know, how that pertains to the end of the year?
Yeah, it's a mixed bag. I feel, Ross, like it's, I can't decide if it was good or bad, to be honest, because I do think it was, I think it hurt our confidence a little bit. It got into us a little and made us a little bit doubtful as to how good we are. And part of it, you know, had we won the Arkansas game, that's probably the game that we had the best chance to win. And we had a chance, you know, we're down four with a minute to go. We had a couple open threes and, but then, you know, we did not play well against UConn. It was disappointing that we had a really good crowd and kind of a hype environment and just did not seem up to the moment. I felt like we played pretty well at Stanford. We didn't make as many threes as we needed to, but I thought we executed and we put ourselves in a position where we didn't, you know, we were kind of in the game against probably a team that's deeper and probably a little more talented even than UConn. But yeah, then you come out of that and, you know, I think your question is, you know, how much better does that make you in the long term versus how much more fragile does it make you in the short term? And the answer is, I don't really know. Like, I do think it made us more fragile in the short term, but I hope at the end of the day, it made us better in the long term, because I think, you know, anytime you can play teams that are elite, like Arkansas is a really good team, but they're not necessarily elite the way UConn and Stanford are in the women's game. And so, but anytime you can play those type of teams, you feel like you ought to have a sense for what is the gap there? How much, you know, how little rope do we have, margin for error do we have? And I think, you know, if you say, okay, well, we can play with them for a quarter or a half or whatever, but how do we get there for 40 minutes? So I don't know. I mean, I hope at the end of the year that those games help us, but I think in the short term, you know, I do wonder if it was just a lot based on, you know, just how really difficult our early schedule was too. I mean, we were on the road a lot. I mean, the competition maybe wasn't across the board as good as what we saw then, but we were, you know, we played 6 out of 7 on the road and
that can be taxing.
Yeah. So I just think we maybe were a little worn down too, going into that stretch.
Yeah. It's kind of funny that it kind of parallels the men's season this year with the fact that both teams were on the road a lot, both kind of got wore down a little bit, maybe felt like, you know, they didn't get their best foot forward. I would like to go further with that point, Glenn, just explain it, because I don't think people think enough about that. Like, oh, they got a road game. Okay, you know. I mean, it's there's a lot into it, isn't there? There just is.
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, especially when they're in school and they're trying to, you know, they're still student athletes. So it's a little different when, you know, in the once you finish your finals and you're out. But we had a long stretch in November where we were on the road a lot. And yeah, you're out of your own bed. You're, you know, yeah, the food is pretty good, but it's all hotel food. And, you know, and even in travel isn't always perfect. I mean, you might think it's going to be pretty smooth, and usually it is, but it's not always. And yeah, I just think there's a, you know, and then you've got to fight a foreign crowd, and sometimes officiating isn't quite as good on the road, you know, or at least you don't think it is. So yeah, there's a lot to battle, especially when, like you said, with the men, and when you're on the road for a certain period of time, it just, you're out of your element. And I think it's hard to perform at your best.
Go ahead, Ross.
Well, Flynn, I was going to ask, you know, now that we're into the new year, end of mid-January, we're really in the thick of the season here. You know, what would you like to see from your girls these next couple of months here that you think you guys need to improve on to give yourselves a chance to win a couple of games again in March?
Sure. Well, I think it's easy to be kind of short-term, you know, have too much of a short-term focus, but what we did against Marquette was good from the standpoint that I feel like we married our scout defense to just working really hard and playing really hard and being active. And I think about it, you know, we talked earlier about when we played Stanford and UConn back to back, we had to be gimmicky and trick it up defensively, because those teams are just, they have just better physical, you know, they're bigger, longer, quicker, you know, and they're really good basketball players too. So when you play teams that are that good, you know, you have to make concessions defensively. And so you have to get a little gimmicky. You have to be really good with, in terms of what you want to do with your scout defense. So you come out of that, and then you kind of forget that you actually just have to, within that scouting report defense, you have to play really hard and be super active. And sometimes against UConn and Stanford, you're telling your kids, no, don't go out and guard her, because we need you to pack the paint, or we need you to be more aware of their elite players. And then when you come back and you play more of a like opponent, which is, you know, those teams that we played right after that, DePaul, Providence, Marquette, Seton Hall. Okay, now you got to do both. You've got to kind of have a synergy between just playing really hard and being scrappy. And also, hey, we got to take away, these two kids are drivers, these two kids are shooters, this kid likes to go right, this kid likes to go left. We're only going to trap this post in this instance. And you're going to make mistakes on that, but I felt like sometimes when you come out of a stretch of games where you're, you know, physically you have to make those concessions, you have a hard time getting back to just playing hard. And I think if we can marry both of those things together, being really active and playing really hard, on top of being intelligent and cerebral, and not, you know, one of the challenges as a coach is giving them enough information without overloading them, right?
I mean, right.
Player, like you don't want to be paralyzed and you're thinking too much, but you also do need to know, hey, this kid wants to drive it versus this kid wants to shoot it. Like, if you can't get that right, you're not going to be successful either. And then, you know, the other thing that we've done is we're moving Lauren Jensen on the ball more. I feel like, you know, when Lauren got to Creighton, we felt like from what we saw early, we needed to play her off the ball more, because she can score it. But I think the more we've seen her, and having lost Tatum Rembau, our point guard from last year, we felt like we'd keep Lauren off the ball primarily. But I think at the end of the day, our ceiling is higher when we have her have the ball in her hands a little more. Not that we're not going to, you know, not that we're not going to play her off the ball, but we're going to move her on the ball more. We'll move Molly Mogensen off the ball a little bit more. Our backup point guard is a freshman, Keani Lockett, who I think can hit, you know, is coming off an ACL, so she wasn't ready to play the first few games. I think she can help us a little bit more here the next couple months. So I think we're going to make that change offensively. And like I said, I think that gives us a little bit higher ceiling because I think we can put Warren in more two-player games with Emma and Morgan Molly. And I think that gives us a little bit higher ceiling maybe in February and March on the offensive end.
We're talking with head coach Jim Flannery. Flann, going back to UConn, I stumbled across Gino's pregame press conference before he left UConn. So I'm listening to that and I'm thinking, wow, they sound pretty wounded here. This could be a shot. And then I'm like, well, it is UConn, yeah. Right?
Right.
were you a little disappointed? Because, I mean, but still, this was a good chance, right? One of the better chances when they were down. Yeah.
Yeah, I feel you're absolutely right, Tim. I felt like that was one of the disappointments coming out of that game is they were vulnerable. We had them at home. You know, they had lost, you know, they were down to really 7.5, you know, 8 kids and didn't have their two best players. So if ever you're going to beat them. And we just, you know, we shot 3 for 28 from the three. I mean, but I felt like we made too many defensive mistakes early that I think got us behind. And then we started to get a little mental, you know, when you play a team that has the mystique that UConn has, you know, if you're just a little sharper on the defensive end early, you can kind of play through that offensive nervousness. And I felt like we made enough mistakes defensively in the first quarter till we put ourselves in a hole. And then, you know, then you're fighting it even more on the offensive end. So we're not going to go 3 for 28 from the three very often. I mean, you know, and Morgan Molly went 1 for 12. I mean, Morgan's, you know, I looked the, you know, she had the 2-game stretch against those two teams, Stanford and UConn, where she really struggled, but her low other than those two games is 13 points. So she's been really consistent, but so we did kind of just, you know, to be honest, I thought we kind of fell on our face a little and it's, you know, but at the same time, I think a lot of it was maybe pressure related. And I can handle that more than just not being tough and not competing. I think a lot of it is the ball didn't go in the basket that night. And, you know, I'd rather have that than, hey, we just didn't fight or we didn't try to rebound or those things. So, cause I do think this team feel, you know, just like on the men's side, I think our team feels more pressure. Our expectations were higher than ever. So there's going to be a night or two where you don't shoot it very well. But do you do the other things? Are you talking on defense? Are you competing on the glass? Are you doing the things that you can control? That's what you try to tell them. It's just, you got to control the controllables, and pressure shows itself in terms of maybe your shooting and those things, but you know, you got to do those other things.
Hey, Coach, you know, obviously we talked a little bit about yesterday and, you know, you jumped out on Marquette right away and it was a 20, 25, 30 point game. And I was watching it late in the game and I went, wow, look at that team still hustling. And I was glad that Matt Dreamer is brought it up today on social media that the Kennedy Townsend, how much hustle she put forward doing a 25, 30 point game. I mean, that was impressive.
Yeah, I think that's the thing that impressed me the most too, is that like you know, Marquette's a good team. And usually when you play 40 minutes against a good team, you have a stretch where, you know, either they run at you or like you said, even if you have a big enough lead, you get a little complacent. I really never felt like that we got complacent at all. And I think our freshmen are great. I mean, Kennedy, you know, you reference Kennedy, who's a freshman, and Keani Lockett, like those kids are competitors and they're, you know, they're not going to play major minutes down the stretch unless we have some, knock on wood, some injuries, but they're capable of coming in and helping us. And they have a great mentality. And I think, you know, when you have a veteran group, you know, and maybe somebody isn't performing, we can plug one of those kids in for 3, 4, 5 minutes at a time, and they're going to help us. And so, yeah, I think the buy-in across the roster is important, because it's one thing to have your upperclassmen be a little bit more invested in your team because they, you know, they're getting to play more and their time is shorter, their time in the program left is shorter, but I really feel good that we have our younger players are really invested too.
Okay, flip right around, take on Seton Hall Wednesday. And then Butler Saturday. What about those two teams?
Well, Seton Hall's really hot. They won 11 of 12, I think, or even maybe 12 of 13. They start out, lost one that they – I'm surprised they lost, and a couple others that they probably wish they could have had. But, yeah, they're talented. They've got a really good point guard, Lauren Park Lane, who averages 20 and 6.5 assists. And then they've got a really good five player, Sydney Cooks, who's 6'4 and was a top 15 or 20 kid out of high school. So, and then they built transfers around him. So they've got a great point guard, great five player, and then a bunch of wings that are transfers who've got good experience, some of them at the power five level. And so they're playing really well with a lot of confidence. I think they're a little better defensively than they've been in the past. It'll be a challenge. I mean, we had two really good games with we blew them out at home last year, won a game in overtime at their place, and then we lost a one pointer in the conference tournament. So we've got a good rivalry with them. It'll be a good game. It'll be intense, I can tell you that. And then Butler, you know, they've only won one league game, but they've got a new coach. They were 1-28 last year. They brought in a new coach. He was at IUPUI, did a really good job, and they're playing hard and they're competitive. They haven't won in the league other than one time, but they've played everybody, but about two PT teams close. So I feel like they're, you know, defensively they're much improved, and they shoot the three pretty well. So it's not going to be an easy game. It's a road game, you know, and they'll be hungry to win. So it's, you know, nothing's easy when you get in the league, and you know, hopefully we can, you know, I told him after Providence, you know, after getting over the disappointment, I said, you got to be bigger than one result. So we got to be bigger than the result of losing to Providence. And I felt like we really came back. And then I told him after Marquette, okay, we had a great performance. You got to be bigger than one result. We got to prepare the right way, and then go out and perform really well against Seton Hall, and then try to build some momentum against Butler. Cause you know how it is in the league. Like, you don't want to look too far ahead, cause you just get intimidated by how many tough games you have.
Yeah.
So you just want to go one at a time. I know that's cliche, but that's kind of where you are.
I know my one trip I made to Butler, the night before the men's game, the women played. Are you playing in Hinkle?
Yeah, we play in Hinkle.
Now, do you have problems shooting there like the men always do?
We have had some problems shooting there. The last 2 years, we've played really well there, but they were down both years. But I tell you what, the first 6 or 7 years, I think we only played once maybe we played well there. I think we won another time not playing well, but we did not. We had probably 3 or 4 straight years where we did not play very well at all and shot it poorly. So, yeah, I don't have – the last 2 years have been much better. So, hopefully, we're closer to where we were then.
I never understand it either, because I had the opportunity to go down, like, before the women played their game that Friday night and walk around in the court, on the court. And it just reminded me of one of those old gyms. You just feel like you could run up and down the floor all night long.
Yeah.
The sight lines are really good. And I just look around and go, why do people struggle here? I don't get it.
Yeah. I don't know if it's the mystique or what, but yeah, I don't know. And the locker rooms are down in a dungeon. It's just that part of it.
They have tiny locker rooms. Yeah.
Tiny locker rooms. It's, you know, I can remember going down there after a couple games being frustrated that I had to go into that locker room after performance. But yeah, it's, you know, I wish they drew a little better, because it would be a neat place to play, but they don't draw real well on the women's side. But we'll see. I mean, you know, it's one of those where we'll have to bring our own energy.
Yeah, bring your own energy. Flan, thanks so much for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, good seeing you guys, Tim, Ross. Appreciate it.
Yeah, you bet, man. Thanks, Flan.
Thanks, Flan. Guys. Okay, thank you.
Head coach Jim Flannery joining us here on Blue Jay Banner. We want to mention our great sponsors, Equitable Bank. We take banking personally. They're the Bank of Blue Jay Banner, serving Nebraska proudly since 1882. Also, West Pacific Dental Group and Dr. Robert Hogan. They'll take care of all your dental needs. They're my dentist, so check them out at 402-697-0765. And then also Infusion Brewery. We haven't had a lot of opportunities to drink and celebrate with Let It Flies lately, but hopefully that will occur Wednesday night. But check out all their products, Infusion Brewery. You see all their great sponsors as they flow through the screen. I want to mention one thing here. It's going to be down the road a little bit, but I just want everybody to get it kind of on the radar. Blue Jay Banner is going to team up with the Chamber of Commerce. They're doing a Blue Jays and Bourbon event in February. And we're kind of teaming up with Trevor over there and with the West Oak Chamber of Commerce. And we're, you know, he's asked us to, you know, help him out with this. So we're going to go and do a show at the event when we'll do our podcast at the event. And it's going to come up probably sometime in late February, very early March. So keep it on your radar. And it sounds like an awesome, awesome event. So you'll want to definitely participate, and we'll give you a lot more information as we get closer to it. But I just wanted to get it out there in front of everyone. Ross, did you have any opportunity to watch the UConn game?
I did. I watched the first half. I watched a decent amount of the second half. It was one of the wedding was at 2, so I kind of had to start getting ready and getting going kind of towards the tail end. But just another game. Just really couldn't make outside jump shots. It's gonna be really hard to win games when you're getting that. And I felt like we did get a lot of looks. I mean, I obviously rebounded the ball very, very well and crashed the offensive glass pretty hard and just had tons of looks that just couldn't fall. I thought Adamo Tinoco played really, really, really well. Probably outplayed Kalk. And so
probably.
That place was rocking in there too. They had come off of 2 losses. You know, a lot of people were talking about them as potentially being ranked number one team in the country, and then they go and lose 2 games in a row, and then they come back home against a preseason favorite. So it is what it is. You know, Danny Hurley was never gonna not win a game against Mac. I mean, it had to happen at some point. So get right. If we can somehow get one Wednesday night, which I think we can. I think we can beat the Xavier team on the road. And then you come home and you got a heck of a Providence team, you know, coming in. I think, you got a huge opportunity this week to turn some things around.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I talked to a friend of mine, real close friend of mine, went to the game at UConn, and I talked to him a little bit today, and he said, you remind him very much of Xavier at Cintas, very much the same kind of atmosphere and really tough place to play. I did something interesting. So, I've been posting a lot of things like after, you know, everybody's all over Creighton for not making threes, and we shouldn't choose many threes, and this is a poor shooting team, and on and on and on and on and on. I posted, well, Arizona just lost to Washington State at home, Washington State team that's not very good. And why did they lose? They shot 16% from 3. Okay. Yeah. So it happens to the best teams in college. I think they shot horribly when they played Utah too in the last that game. And so everybody's like, yeah, whatever. But it seems to happen to us a lot. I got to thinking, I don't think that's the case. So I actually went back and did some research today, and Zach can kind of back me up on this. So I went back to the Sweet 16 team. Okay.
Okay.
Now you can split hairs about, what constitutes a bad shooting night. Okay. I just took the benchmark of under 30% from 3 for the game. Okay. Cause that's below what you should shoot as a Division I team. Okay.
Yeah.
So this team so far has had 5 of those nights. All right. The Sweet 16 team had 11 in 31 games.
Wow.
And that's with Mitch Balick and Zigarowski. Okay.
So that's the team that was the COVID year. I would be curious, the year before, the team that was really good.
Yeah, I did look that up. They had 6.
I was going to say that team didn't seem as streaky as the COVID year team.
Right. They were probably, I would think, if you were going to look at what our best shooting teams, especially under Mac, I would think that team would be right there. Probably.
I agree. I agree. I agree with you. And I'm completely on your team here. I will say this team does, at least again, through, you know, what have we played, 16 games, they do seem to have kind of that air of streakiness a little bit. I didn't expect Baylor to be as streaky as he's been. I will say that. You know, Arthur is obviously pretty streaky 3-point shooter. So it's just, you know, I don't know, maybe things will, you know, kind of progress positively to the mean by the end of the year, but gosh, yeah, there has been some just really, really poor shooting nights so far. I mean, this is, you know, hopefully that's what I'm saying. It progresses. I mean, I'm looking at the luck factor analytic on KenPom. We are literally the 7th unluckiest team in college basketball right now, apparently.
Yeah. Well, by the way, let me correct something. I meant 16 games. We've had 5 times in 16. That team had 11 and 31. So the percentage is very equal. Interestingly enough, so we're talking about that great shooting team the year we won the Big East, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody's, you know, panicking and are we going to make the NCAA tournament? And oh my God, the world's won. What do you think that team's record was after 5 games in the conference?
It was really bad. Wasn't it 1-4?
2-3.
Yeah, they might have started 1-3. I remember. Yeah,
2-3 after 5 games. So we're at 3-2. Plus, unlike that team, this team has gotten a, you know, the league is not, frankly, as deep as it was that year. That year, the league was much deeper. Okay.
And yeah, that team had some really good players in that year.
Right.
I mean, that.
So I'm just doing a comparison. So we've already gone on the road after Wednesday, we'll have played Xavier, Marquette and UConn on the road. We're done going. The only other of the higher echelon teams in the league we haven't gone on the road yet will be Providence. So the schedule totally flips around in our favor. Mm-hmm. If we just take care of the home court and beat the bottom feeders, we're going to be just fine. And that would even go with a loss on Wednesday. I'm not, don't want a loss. I'm not counting on it. I'm just saying those types of things will happen. So I just don't, the panic, just everybody's got to just calm down. You know, and if you know anything about Mac, we've always had a little bit of a bump in the road in January at some point. And in middle of February, his teams, generally speaking, come on very strong.
I'd be totally fine with no bumps in the road. We already had our big bump in the road in the 6-game losing streak. That's more than okay with me. I mean, yeah, I'm going back and I'm looking at that 2019-2020 team. I mean, that's a team that started like we just said, they started 2-3 in the league. And Tim, that's a team that lost at Georgetown,
right?
Okay. I mean, that's I specifically remember, I'm gonna look at the box score, Tyshawn Alexander had a really, really poor game, and then they came back and had that big home game against Providence where, you know, Marcus hits a huge shot and, you know, the season kind of seemed to flip from there. So there's still a long ways home. I know people are frustrated and, you know, obviously the record hasn't lived up to the hype, but I still just think that there's a long ways home here. And this team has got the pieces to still make a deep run. I firmly believe that.
And there's one thing I want to say in regards to the hype as well. And I didn't articulate this when it was happening during that 6-game losing streak. You had a lot of people saying, well, Mac didn't really do anything to slow down the hype. What do you want him to say?
Yeah.
Do you want him to say, everybody just slow down? Our team's not good. Let's not hype this team up because they're not very good. Mac isn't going to say something to the detriment of his own team. It's not his job.
That's taken off like wildfire on our message board over at BlueJayBanner.com. I don't get that either. I don't know. I don't know what you want him to say. Yeah, like,
that's really silly.
Yeah, I know. Like, well, Mac bought into it. Well, yeah, I bought into it. The first practice I went to, I went, wow, these guys are really good. You know, I just think there's just a couple things that have happened. Injury, obviously, to Kolk. Sharif having a slow time getting back into, you know, kicking off the rust. Our bench not being as strong as we thought it would be.
Right.
And then, you know, some up and down shooting nights. But again, I'm historically look at it. Other teams have had that and overcome that very easily. So I'm not going to be too worried about that. I do think some people have a legitimate gripe when they say the ball kind of sticks a little bit at times when the shots aren't dropping. And I would agree with that. But, and Mac has been, you know, really preaching on that to get, you know, keep that ball movement up.
Yeah.
Zach, do we have, I put together a little bit of another, little film breakdown of, the game on Saturday.
Yep. Let me get that opened up.
Yeah. And all it is just, it's got some audio, just kind of taking a look at maybe, and I want to speak to you, Ross, right after we're done with it, because it has some, an NBA kind of component to it that I want to talk to you about. Okay.
Get this open. There we go. All right. You want to let me screen share real quick?
Oh, I apologize immensely. I was so excited Glenn was on with us, I didn't even do that.
All good. All right. Then make sure.
Okay, we're gonna show you a play here.
You guys have audio on that?
Making the run here in the second half.
There we go.
Yep.
But I'm gonna show you where just a little bit of better awareness could have got them an easy shot. You know, the big factor in the game was that Creighton didn't shoot very well. We've got Trey Alexander bringing the ball down on a fast break. At this point, he's gonna look towards Kalkbrenner. You can see what's happening down here. Sonogo's getting down, going down in the post area. But you've got Hawkins on Nembhard. And because Kalkbrenner's outside, Caravan stops right there to pick up Kalkbrenner. So now you've got Sonogo kind of playing free safety, much as Kalk does. The ball goes back to Trey here. Now this is a mismatch. Right? Caravan, as we saw the whole game, had trouble with Kaluma. And Kalkbrenner has a little bit of a size advantage plus a strength advantage on him. This would have been a perfect time for Kalkbrenner to go down low. The problem is Sonogo is still there, but watch what happens. Kaluma spreads out to the corner here. And as he does that, Sonogo's got to follow him because now Nembhard is going to go down underneath the basket, start to move. Hawkins goes with him. And when that happens, Kaluma starts flaring out to the wing, and Sonogo's got to follow him. That leaves a wide open path underneath here. And if Kalk just goes down underneath, posts up, he's got a nice post-up play. And if Sonogo does come over, now you've got a double team where Kaluma or Nembhard would be open. One of the reasons I don't particularly like Trey handling the ball, as some people do, is he tends to dribble a little bit with his head down and not see what's going on. And that's what kind of happens right here. And here you can see that switching going on. Now Sonogo realizes, I got to get out on the wing or Kaluma's going to shoot this one if the ball comes back over there. But in the meantime, had Kalk gone down into the post, he would have had a one-on-one with Caravan and a much better chance to score down low. Even so, the awareness here of Trey as he's dribbling in the wing. Now you've got the situation you like. Teams have been shutting off that roll to the basket, but here you've got a situation with a little bounce pass of only about 6 feet over to Kalk, and he could take it along. The only guy here is Hawkins, and that would be a big, big mismatch for Creighton. But instead, Caravan does a nice job of getting off the double team, but still, had he bounced past it there, there's not a lot that at that point UConn could have done, because he had a clear path to the basket because Caravan was out here. Even so, had he come over, you've got a guy on the wing here much quicker than Sonogo. You also had Nembhard in the corner. So I guess my point here on this play was you had a couple different instances where just a little better awareness of matchups by the guys, you could have got a more favorable matchup and got a much easier look at the basket. Obviously, the Jays struggled shooting the ball, and that's kind of what you're looking at is, can we get easier matchups?
Ross, I want to ask you, you know, from your big, much bigger NBA guy than I am, of course, but you know, that's one thing I hear a lot, and that's one thing sometimes I don't see, like, right there, like, in the NBA, had this been an NBA game, Kalkbrenner would immediately recognize that he is guarded by Caravan. Not that he's a small guy by any means, but Kalk has experience, has size on him, and could have eaten strength on him, and could have, and, you know, in the NBA, that he would have rolled right to the post and asked for the ball. You know what I'm saying? And I don't think in college guys, and maybe they're just not developed enough or what. I know Mac tries to take advantage of you know, a lot of the stuff fans look at and go, oh, what are they doing? They're just dribbling around out front, da 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 da. He's doing that to set up matchups sometimes. And I'm just wondering from your perspective, I know college teams probably don't do it as much as maybe they should to get the right matchup.
Yeah, the NBA. Yeah, no, I think what you're saying has some validity to it. I mean, the NBA is much more, and all those guys offensively are so talented that, you know, if they feel that they've got a mismatch one-on-one, they're going to do everything they can to get so-and-so the ball. And they're just much, they're all just so good at that. And they're so conditioned and seasoned with that, that's what they want to do when they see that. I think the college game is a little bit different in that regard. You know, it's interesting, despite the fact that there's a 24-second shot clock in the NBA and a 30-second shot clock in college, I think a lot of times, and again, they're the best players in the world, so the NBA guys tend to move a little bit slower. They tend to recognize things more. They don't get nearly as sped up and caught up in a bunch of different things that college players do. And so it's just kind of a different learning curve. They're just not at the same level of basketball IQ, quite frankly, that NBA players are at. And so, I mean, obviously, you know, coaches are going to try and exploit mismatches as much as they possibly can, but there's only so much you can do as a coach without, you know, barking every single second on every single dribble, you know, for your players to do something, you know? Yeah.
And I think in the video I was showing, you know, it was just an example of, you know, Trey brings a lot when he does ball hand because he's so long and so forth. But on the other hand, Nembhard, because he's ran so much more point than Trey has at the Division I level, has a better sense of, you know, he you know, as you could watch him, you know, he's testing and diving in, diving out, and seeing how he can penetrate that defense. And I think on that play I just showed you, I wonder what would have happened had Nembhard had the ball. Like, if that pass wouldn't have gone back to Kalkbrenner at that point. But you had to be – the one thing we talked a lot about, you asked earlier about instant reaction. The one thing we talked a lot about was Kaluma. He was just an absolute beast on the board Saturday. Yeah. 16 rebounds. I mean, he was tremendous. And that's two games in a row now, which is that's really positive. And I think Jeremy Hauer, our recruiting analyst at BlueJayBanner.com, he mentioned that. He goes, you know, as everybody was freaking out, you know, oh, God, another loss, couldn't shoot, da-da-da-da. And Jeremy just mentioned, you know what, there's more positives today than negatives. And I think Kaluma was one. I think, you know, the fact that we out-rebounded them by 15, shot the ball poorly, and we're still right there.
Yeah, I think Art, you know, to your point, Art has, you know, he's been a lot of things this year offensively. He has not been very consistent on that end of the floor, and I know that's been frustrating for himself and his teammates and the fans, everybody. But God, you can't ever question his tenacity. I mean, he's a guy that he's a dog. He's going to go after rebounds. He's going to be physical. He likes playing that brand of basketball. And so he's, you know, I think that's a really good trait to have. He's a guy, even when shots aren't falling for him, he's going to go after rebounds with that mentality of every single rebound is mine, and try and give you a chance at second chance points off offensive rebounds. That's a heck of a luxury to have. you know, as a team to have a guy with his size and physicality, you know, rebounding the basketball for you.
What about matchups on Wednesday night? With, you know, you mentioned, I think Creighton's got a really good shot at this game. What about the Xavier team makes you say that?
Well, for starters, I don't think they're very deep. I don't think that they have a ton of guys that they can just run in and out. Like, I mean, the one guy that they play off the bench a decent amount of minutes is Jerome Hunter, who's a good player. You know, Nunji killed us at home last year. I mean, he just, you know, when he's really getting into a rhythm, I mean, I think that might be a potentially. So I don't know if Kalk will guard Nunji or not, because kind of play the ball screen defense that we need him to play. I mean, typically he plays kind of that drop coverage. Well, you can't really do that with Nunji as a pick and pop guy. So that, you know, defensively they're going to be really, really tuned in. I'll be interested to see if maybe Kaluma guards Nunji and starts on him. And you can maybe be a little bit more aggressive with, you know, with ball screen stuff. But, you know, I just think, especially if some of those guys get in foul trouble, like if Kalk can get Fremantle or Nunji, especially Fremantle into foul trouble, I think they might have a tough time, you know, just because of their limited bench. If we can kind of force the issue a little bit, so we'll see.
Kai Tandy is one guy that, you know, was just, remember last couple of years ago, he was a lights out shooter for them. He's kind of really dropped down on the pecking order of a guy that plays a lot.
He doesn't play a ton of minutes anymore.
Yeah, but Hunter, like you said, is a stud. But I think it's a troublesome matchup the other way too with Fremantle, because Fremantle can step out and hit threes too. Here's something we briefly brought up, and I don't know how this works. I think you absolutely have to have Kalk on a Nunji, even though he can step out, and then you're going to pull Kalk away from the basket, because we can't. Who else can we put on him? You know, we're giving up 5 inches. Anybody else we put on him?
Yeah. No, I see your point, but I just think a guy like Kaluma can be physical enough with Nunji that he's not going to get pushed off of his spots if Nunji tries to take him into the post. I don't know. They kind of present a problem. I mean, there's a reason Xavier's, you know, won a lot of games. I mean, those two guys are really good, skilled players, and they just kind of present some matchup problems.
How opposed would you be to this? And this is one thing I threw out there. I think Boom is like the guy that really makes him go, right? He's their leading scorer and so forth. Mm. I was thinking, when you look at him, even though he's a smaller guy, I thought Kaluma, you know, body type and so forth, fits well with Boom. And I would put Baylor on Freeman. Not a lot of size difference there. Maybe a little bit of strength-wise, but not much. And just to take away Fremantle's three point opportunities.
Yeah, I mean, the good thing is, you know, Fremantle and Baylor and Arthur are big guards. I mean, they're big kids, you know, so they have the ability to go in and guard bigger players and hold their own. So that's a nice luxury for us to, you know, for us to have. So it's I'm not sure. Maybe Trey will get Boom. I don't know. Maybe I would imagine Trey starts on Boom and Nemhard goes over to why am I blanking on names? Kunkel. Sorry.
Yeah. Well, you got Colby Jones too.
Yeah. And yeah, that's true. He's the other one. Yep.
So probably a, from a speed perspective, a Baylor on Kunkel type matchup would maybe be a little better. Although Kunkel's not, I don't think, as effective as I've seen him in other years, but at any rate, I don't know. Has Adam joined us? Hey, Adam, are you here?
I am. I'm not sure why my video is not working.
Oh, man. We were so looking forward to seeing you, too.
Let me see what I can do here. Oh, there we go.
There we go. How you doing, man?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. How was the coach's show?
It was good. Yeah. You know, they're always more exciting after a win, I feel like. So Sean does a pretty good job with this.
I want to go there first. By the way, this is Adam Baum of Cincinnati Inquirer, the beat writer for the Xavier Musketeers. I want to go there first with you, Adam. Sean Miller coming in. I mean, obviously everybody was, you know, wondering, okay, how's he going to do it? You know, after the thing at Arizona, how's he going to do back at Xavier? I mean, there was a little doubt he was going to be a pretty successful coach. I know some people don't like it. I love the mic'd up things. You know, I hadn't got to see that side of him. And I was so impressed after watching that game, the way he coached those guys. I mean, it was a lot of tough love at times, but the way he interacted with the players and addressed them and told them what, you know, needed to happen. I was just very impressed with that. How have you been impressed with the way he's handled the team?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's a weird situation. If you remember what happened at the end of last year, you know, this was a guy that actually got hired during their NIT run. And when they were at Madison Square Garden in the semifinals and finals of the NIT, Sean Miller was sitting up in the stands watching this team that he's going to inherit play basketball games. It was this weird dynamic. And then you come in, you get everyone together. And I think that these guys have really taken to him. There was this really revealing thing that I thought that happened at Villanova on Saturday after the game. And you got to remember the context here, because Zach Fremantle was suspended for the first week of the season, suspended indefinitely. It ended up only being 1 week, but at Villanova on Saturday, Fremantle had arguably his best game that he's ever had at Xavier, 29-11, 4 assists, 0 turnovers. And after the game, I basically asked him, you know, what's changed? This is a Xavier team that only won 8 Big East games a year ago, and you're 5-for-5 already this year. And he basically said that Sean Miller's love of basketball, his love of the game, is so contagious that it's impossible to avoid it if you're playing for him. And he talked about how enlivening that has been for him personally, for this guy to come in. And you just see every day how much he cares about this, how much he loves it. And to me, that was the most telling example of what Sean Miller has meant to this team and to this locker room, is that all these guys have taken to him in such a way because of how much he cares about this. So to answer your question, that's probably the clearest cut example that I can provide of what Sean Miller has meant to Xavier already so far.
Do you get the vibe from the fan base that, you know, that they are surprised by how quick the turnaround has been?
I think there is a little bit of a surprise. And I think a big part of that is because there's like almost an apprehensive optimism right now, because someone actually pointed this out today. We're all, you know, everyone is so enamored with Xavier's start and where they're at. Well, their numbers on January 9th, 2023 are very similar to what they were on January 9th, 2022.
A year ago. Yeah.
And so I think that the difference is Sean Miller is a big difference in that. And I also think that, you know, a year ago, they may have had some good numbers at this point, but they weren't really elite at anything. And the difference this year is, they're elite offensively. So I think people are surprised, but I also think that people kind of expected Sean Miller to get this program back to where they're used to being. I just don't think that anyone thought that it would happen as quickly as it has. And obviously we have, you know, 15 Big East games to go, and they've still got to go on the road at Creighton. They've still got to go on the road at Marquette and to Providence. And there's a lot of tough games out there on the schedule, but I think everyone's pretty pleased right now with where this team's at.
It's funny you mentioned that, because we just mentioned it earlier before you came on the Creighton side of things, how everybody's driving their cars off, you know, bridges and everything. And I said, do you realize the Big East championship team of about 3 years ago, at this point in the season, their record was 2-3. So yeah. It's like a long season. Like you mentioned, yeah. Things can change quickly. Boom's always been a huge addition to this team.
Yeah, I can't You know, you asked me if people are surprised, and you know, this is a real thing that happened back in the preseason. Freshman Desmond Claude was playing just out of his mind in the preseason, and there were honestly people wondering if Desmond would be the starting point guard this year. And then Sule, you start playing real games, and you know, you're going against high major teams, and Sule has just been a revelation. Like, this is the biggest difference to me from the last 4 years, is that Xavier actually has a point guard now. They have this guy who's shooting 47% from 3-point. He's leading them in scoring. And most importantly, you saw it on Saturday at Villanova. If Xavier gets in a situation where they're in a close game, Sule Boom is darn near automatic at the free throw line. I mean, he went 10 for 10 at the line against Villanova. He's done this a few times this year where at the end of a game, another team has to foul. You just get the ball to him. He goes to the line. He makes his free throws. And I think people kind of underestimated him in a lot of ways. Like, he's undersized. He's playing for a new coach in a new system. He's playing against a level of competition that he's never previously seen. It's probably going to take some time before we see him really impact this team. That hasn't been the case at all. He's come right out of the gate and impacted this team in a really profound way. And I keep coming back to the same point of what a difference it makes seeing a team that has a point guard who can shoot, who can score, who can facilitate. It's like, it's a complete game changer for Xavier at this point.
I remember we discussed that a lot last year. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, they don't have a point guard. How the hell? What are they, Georgetown? You know, I mean, come on, you know?
Yeah, it makes a huge difference.
Bench. So one area I think probably if you looked at this team, you're like, ugh. You know, we haven't really dug down the bench. One guy that's sitting down has been kind of moved down the chain a little bit. That was, we thought was going to be a pain years to come, was Kai Dandy. Yeah. What's the story with him?
Yeah, he's an enigma. He's very hard to figure out. You know, at the start of the year, he got some starts early on. A big part of that was because Adam Kunkel was dealing with a foot injury. And then he kind of regressed a little bit. You know, the energy wasn't there in practice. He kept making mistakes. And now he's sort of, I mean, Sean said on Saturday that he's really, they're looking at him to kind of be that eighth man in the rotation. So I think maybe he's reestablished some of that goodwill. But the thing for him has always been, I think for a long time, he had it in his mind that like when he's out there, he's got to knock down shots. And I think it's taken Sean Miller some time to impress upon him this idea that, look, whether you make a shot or you miss a shot, that's not going to keep you in the game. That's not going to be the reason that I pull you from the game. What is going to be the reason that I pull you from the game is if you don't guard the basketball, if you don't run the offense and execute and make the right plays. And these are all things, you know, Kiki, you get into his past, and this is a guy who I think coming out of high school in Kentucky was like, sixth all time in Kentucky high school points scored. Just a dude that could purely fill it up, get hotter than a microwave in a hurry. And now he comes to college. And well, you don't necessarily need him to do that all the time. You need him to do all these other little things. But yeah, your point to the bench is incredibly valid. Sule Boom plays like 34 minutes per game. They don't have a ton of depth. That's something that they're really working to develop. They've gotten quite a bit out of Jerome Hunter. Desmond Claude's really emerged as like that number seven guy. And then Kiki could be that eighth guy. But really it's up to Kiki if he can do what's required, what's asked of him. And to his credit, he has stuck with it. I think, you know, he's trying to give them everything that he has, and we'll see how it plays out. But the crazy thing about Kiki is, Kiki still has 2 years of eligibility left after this year, which is just wild. You know, he got hurt last year and then he got the COVID year. So you could be seeing him for a while if he wants to stick around and keep giving this a go.
Seems like he was there when Mac was there, for crying out loud.
Yeah, it's been a while.
I was going to ask about Fremantle and Nungy, kind of that tandem of 4 and 5, because that's been they can pose serious, you know, matchup problems just because of how skilled both of them are. You know, do you get the sense that, you know, from I know you said earlier kind of about Fremantle and, you know, how Sean Miller's, you know, been, you know, his love of the game and his coaching has been sort of contagious, you know, from Nungy's standpoint, do you feel as if he's made a jump from Travis Steele to Sean Miller? Or do you think he was, you know, kind of the same player? Obviously, he had a huge game at Creighton last year, but he seems a little bit more well-rounded this year, the times I've watched Xavier, instead of just purely a kind of a pick-and-pop guy.
Yeah. No, that's a good point. I think the biggest thing with both of those guys, and you see it in Jack, you see it in Fremantle, is Sean Miller's really gotten the most out of their passing. I think this year, as opposed to last year, Fremantle's looking to pass way more than just spot up and shoot. Same with Nungy. They do high-low a ton. They work on it every day in practice. Fremantle gets the ball out on the perimeter. Nungy ducks in, and Fremantle has to feed it to him. And they reverse those roles quite a bit. So I do think that having both of those guys presents a ton of problems for teams. And I know from Creighton's perspective, like one of the things Xavier did really well last year that I thought impacted their ability to beat the Blue Jays was, you know, whoever Kalkbrenner was guarding, they brought that big out to the perimeter and then they posted up the other guy. And it was like, and you found a mismatch there sort of by inverting your offense and using those big men to your advantage. So that's actually the biggest thing I'm looking at for Wednesday night's game is what does Creighton do to match up with those two bigs? Now, the same side is the thing you're looking for is you have these two offensively skilled big guys that you play together. Well, at the other end of the floor, a lot of teams, you know, have an advantage playing against both those big guys because you can pull Nungy away from the basket. You can match Fremantle up with a maybe a smaller skilled guy who can play on the perimeter, who can drive it, who can post it. And then you're challenging them at that end of the floor. So that's been the trick with this Xavier lineup is that, hey, can you get Fremantle to defend a guy on the perimeter, which was a huge liability last year.
Sure.
He's getting better at it this year, but yeah, to your point, like I think that Sean Miller's found a way to really get a lot out of playing both of those guys together.
Besides being an incredibly streaky team shooting the basketball, what concerns you about Creighton?
Yeah, I think Creighton's I watched them play UConn on Saturday, and I know that game did not go their way, and they could – it just seemed like – yeah, you know, it's one of those things where I'm watching it and like the broadcasters were giving UConn's defense a ton of credit. And I kept thinking Creighton's getting decent shots. They just aren't going in.
Right.
And I can imagine how frustrating that was. But the one guy that I was just super impressed with was Kaluma. And then, you know, this is a Creighton team that in my mind is built a little bit like Xavier offensively in that you've got five guys out there on the floor, all five of whom can be explosive and can really change the dynamic of the game. So this is going to be a game where Xavier's defense is probably going to be tested in a way that, you know, they probably haven't been tested in since playing like a team like Gonzaga, where it's like the team that you're playing against has five guys who can all score if they need to. There's some matchups in there one-on-one that I find really interesting. Nungy and Kalkbrenner is going to be a battle. Kaluma, I'm assuming, is probably going to be matched up with Fremantle.
Yeah.
And then I would wager that Xavier's probably going to throw Colby Jones on Baylor Shireman. So this is one of those games where it's like, this is what I love about the Big East, because for as well as Xavier's playing and for as much as Creighton has maybe struggled recently, all that really doesn't matter in a game like this. This is one that I anticipate is going to be a good one. And I'm sure if I'm Greg McDermott, you know, I'm talking to my team about the fact that, hey, Xavier beat us twice last year. One of those games, I think Creighton led by like 17 at halftime or something like that. So
Xavier went on like a 25-2 run to start the second half.
Yeah. Yeah. So the Creighton's going to be a motivated bunch in this game. And I love Ryan Nembhard. I know that, you know, his ability to like get to the basket and when he gets out in transition, he's a problem. And then Trey Alexander, like if you can drop 30 plus points in a Big East game, you're doing something right. So,
what about just the last question, just overall right now, the Big East, it kind of seems to be, to me, I separate it top five and I throw Creighton into that bunch just because we know they have the talent. I've kind of put Villanova down unless they get more back. I just don't see them challenging those other five. How do you feel?
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. And Villanova's in this weird spot where it's like you still have a ton of talent on that roster, but I'm not sure that all the pieces necessarily fit together the way that you need them to. Justin Moore would obviously help that. He gave a really interesting interview about, I don't know if you saw it or you read it, but he was basically like, look, I'm cleared to practice. And everyone wanted to know if he was going to play. And he was like, I might play, I might not play. I'm going to kind of wait and see. So who knows if he's going to come back this year. And for that reason, it's hard to put them up into the top five. But I think the top five is pretty clear at this point. It's Creighton, it's Marquette, it's Providence, it's Xavier, and it's UConn. And I'm not sure what the shuffling is going to look like over the next 15 or so games. But I think if I had to pick five teams from the Big East that are going to make the NCAA tournament, those would be my five right now. Easy.
Yeah, unfortunately for those five to gain traction nationally, the bottom of the league is really bad this year.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
I mean, you got a team like Seton Hall, who's usually pretty good. I mean, my God, they're so offensively challenged. It's crazy. And you got Butler that's not very good. And you've got, you know, I think of that bunch. I think DePaul actually has, I think as the season rolls on, I think actually they've got a chance to do something.
DePaul's as the season rolls on. DePaul's scary because they have size, they have athleticism. You catch them on a night where a few guys are knocking down some perimeter shots, and then the way that they crash the glass can be a problem. But, yeah, to your point, it's like Xavier just went to Villanova and won, and it's probably not going to be a quad one road game for Xavier because I think Villanova's like 87th in the net, and yeah, unless they get hot and they – you know, knock off UConn and knock off Marquette on the road and some other things happen. Like, so you've got like five opportunities in the league to win quad one games on the road.
Yeah.
That's not ideal.
No. Adam, thanks so much for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Always a pleasure. Nice to finally put the faces with names.
I know, it's great. Thanks, man.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks.
Take care, guys.
Adam Baum, Cincinnati Inquirer, beat writer for the Xavier Musketeers. He was awesome. So was Flan. That was an awesome show. We should do these. We should do this Blue Jay Banner thing more often.
I agree. Jam packed, my friend.
All right. So, join us right after the game Wednesday, like 8:05, whenever the game gets over. We'll be right here. Jump on YouTube, and we'd really love your participation as well. And we'll give you all that information as well. And our next Blue Jay Banner show to be determined. Let's put it that way. I think Monday, but I'm not 100% sure. I may be taking a little trip.
There you go, Tim. Hey, go watch your boys. Go watch your boys.
All right. Thank you, our wonderful producer, Zach. Thanks,